Hey there, listening to the Pop Shop Podcast. But not just any episode of the Pop Shop Podcast, this is the headliner interview. Talk we do every Thursday with someone with a story to tell. My name's Chris Payne, I'm a staff writer at Billboard, and I host the headliner interview. This week, do you like synth pop? If you listen to this podcast, I have a feeling you do, and so does Shura. That's our guest this week. She's influenced by people like Madonna and Kylie Minogue. She recently toured with Tegan and Sara. We connected about that and her music. Her debut album, Nothing's Real, came out earlier this year. It's definitely going to make my top 10 list at the end of the year. You'll hear it. We'll talk about it. Talk about John Hughes films, how she loved to make a queer take on a John Hughes kind of high school themed film, and how she's already basically done that with her music videos. She's really neat. You're going to enjoy this talk. Once you're done, please rate us on iTunes, write in your comments. We appreciate them so much. They actually really, really do help out, help us make this show better. And you can listen to old episodes, too, when you're there in iTunes. We've had Jimmy World on the headliner interview 2 weeks back, last week Butch Walker. But right now, it's about Shura. Here she is on the Pop Shop Podcast. Shura, welcome to the Billboard office.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming by. I feel like you're dressed in like your trademark go-to look.
Yeah, the beanie and the denim jacket is well and truly on, okay. Even though it's quite warm in here.
Yeah, well, I've got my hoodie on. You called it a jumper.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I'm discovering there is a language barrier between people from America and people from the UK. Like, there just is, slightly. Not
so
with
similar,
everything.
So different, though.
Yeah, like, and pants are not what we think pants are, which is can be really, you know, like, you can really say the wrong thing, essentially. Like, if pants are, like, underwear, which is what they are for us. And, yeah, so it's confusing. Like, yeah.
Wait, I didn't know that one, so...
Yeah, so, like, I would say, like, I went to buy some pants, and I'm talking about, like, underwear.
What, like, do you used to say, jeans, or what would you say?
Trousers.
Trousers, okay. Because fashion-wise, trousers means a very specific cut in America, yeah. Like baggier, kind of.
Yeah, like maybe, do you think that, is it like a smarter thing? Like,
it's definitely a, like a cooler way, like it's something like fashionable people would wear, like trousers.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas trousers is just like totally normal, just covers everything. I mean, we definitely say like, and we would say like jogging bottoms for like sweatpants.
Okay.
So there is, yeah.
That's
jumpers.
A very literal way of describing sweatpants.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long have you been on tour in America?
I think this is probably my fifth or sixth week of being here. Yeah, yeah. So it's been over a month, like a month and a half.
So all the American slang has been hitting you hard for a while.
Oh, yeah. I've been like confused for like five weeks for sure.
Is there any moment where you put yourself in a weird situation, just like, I use that word wrong?
I wouldn't say, there's definitely moments where I say stuff on stage and I go, I don't think anyone understood me. So for instance, before I play Touch, I'm like, oh, well, there's a video for this where there's loads of people snogging. So if you want to like snog someone in the audience right now, if you fancy someone, now's the time to snog them. And I'm like, I don't know if they know what snog means. And I don't know if they use the word fancy. So then I have to like explain it. And then I'm like, I've just been talking for way too long. I need to just carry on. I just need to play and start saying make out and like have a crush. Yeah.
So you were recently on tour in America with Tegan and Sara and now M83.
Yeah.
What was it like touring with Tegan and Sara?
That was insane. It was amazing on so many levels. One, they're absolutely hilarious, incredibly... kind of driven, impressive people. Like, they've been doing it for 17 years, and it's really inspiring to watch, you know, how much effort they put into everything and how they think about absolutely every aspect of what it is that they do, and trying to make it as positive an experience as possible for their fans, of which now there are significantly more than when I first became a fan of them kind of 10 years ago. And I remember them playing the 100 Club in London, which is this, you know, tiny venue, and I had a vinyl of theirs and kind of ended up queuing at the merch table and got it signed. So it's really weird to think that 10 years ago, well, maybe seven, it's probably about 7 years ago, that I did that, and I've gone from there to then, you know, supporting them for a month in North America. In, you know, and I've seen in that time, not only have I kind of hung out with my teenage heroes, like I've seen more of America than most people see in their entire life, like in a month. Like how is that not the coolest thing? And I kind of feel like if I told my 16-year-old self that, I probably would have just like fainted. And I would have definitely exploded.
They're not even American, they're Canadian.
Yeah, I know.
You have a whole nother frontier.
Yeah, yeah. And we did some dates in Canada, and that was really awesome. We played their hometown, Calgary, which was really cool. And yeah, their crew are awesome, and their records are amazing. Like every single one is I love, like, and they're totally different. Yeah, they're really inspiring people.
Yeah, and you both worked with Greg Kurstin recently.
Yeah, yeah. That was I think that's how I found out that they liked my music, is when I was in with Greg. He said that he'd played Sarah some of my songs and that she was a fan, and I was like in the room, I was like, oh yeah, cool. And inside I was like, what the, oh my god, like exploding, like inside, and just trying to keep it cool because mm-hmm. I was in his house, like yeah. So that kind of blew my mind for sure. But yeah, it's great. And they genuinely like my music, which is another just really weird thing. And they're so, like, every night they would just be really generous to me as a support act. And I think it's a lot of it's to do with the fact that they were, you know, supporting people for a very long time, you know, did big tours with Katy Perry and yeah, just really generous. I quite miss them already. I miss being, yeah, it was just like,
yeah,
it was like
the regularity of being,
yeah,
every day.
Yeah. But M83 is insane also, and the crew there are amazing, and it's one of the most impressive, if not the most impressive show I've ever seen in my life. So yeah, it's not a bad thing to have left that to do this.
Right. Have there been any other oh shit moments when someone else you really respect, you found out, got into your music?
Totally. Like, it's happened like a lot. Like, it happened with Def Hines, it happened with like Kylie Minogue and Sam Smith, and just all these people that, you know, I mean, the Def Hines thing was really insane because he was such a kind of source of inspiration for me, and his collaboration with Solange was like such an important kind of EP for me, and it really, I think, shifted my what it was that I was doing and made me feel kind of comfortable to explore, you know, an area of music that I hadn't really explored before. So when he sort of said that he liked what it was that I did, I was just like, oh, that's insane. But yeah, it does happen, you know. I guess it's really weird when you, as a fan of music, because most musicians, right, love music, when you realize that the people that you've looked up to or have influenced you or inspired you start to realize or become aware of what you do, it's a strange kind of adjustment that you have to go through, because you're all of a sudden, like, I guess, like a peer of theirs as well. So, you know, it's, you know, when Jessie Ware like says, oh, you're awesome, you're like, oh whoa, that's insane, because before you were like here and I was down here, and now we're not at the same level, because obviously everyone's career is different, and you know, it's not that you're kind of equals in that way, but you're all suddenly seen in the same, you're in the same sphere.
Yeah,
you might be in different positions in the sphere, but you're in the sphere.
Yeah.
And that's a weird adjustment to go through as a human.
Yeah. And talking about influences and such, when I read up press on you, how other writers have written about you, hear a lot of influences about early Madonna pops up a lot, and yeah, Janet Jackson, things like that, 80s pop music, synth pop. Do you think that's accurate? Do you think that describes what you're about when you made the record, who you are now?
Totally. I think, I mean, I think that if I was to say that it didn't, I would just be like either lying or being like willfully ignorant. Like, I'm hugely inspired by that era of Madonna. I'm hugely inspired by that era of Janet, you know, 90s Janet Jackson. I actually think my record is quite different to all of those things in the end, but it's definitely clear that that's sort of where I've pulled from, inspiration wise. I'm never offended when people sort of say, oh, it sounds a bit like True Blue era. I'm just like, I'm kind of happy with that. I mean, that's kind of probably one of the best things that you could ever say about, yeah, like, what, I mean, other than maybe being like, oh, it's kind of a bit like Beethoven. Like, okay. Madonna is like the Beethoven of like pop music. So
you're not gonna be like, I was going more for Ray of Light era. Yeah. Not quite.
That is an excellent record as well. Very, very different. Kind of like I really, really love William Orbit. And that era of Madonna as well. But what I love about Madonna is that she just changes, like, constantly. She's always, like, changing her sound. She never feels kind of like she has to stick to one thing, in the same way that someone like PJ Harvey doesn't stick to one thing. They're obviously very different artists and, operate on different levels in different spheres. But, like, I love that fearlessness of being like, oh, you know what, I did this and it worked really well, but now I'm going to do this. And sometimes it works brilliantly. And other times it's like, you know what, maybe that wasn't the best thing that I could have done. But it's that fearlessness to just go into the unknown and go like, I'm going to work with this person now and take everything that they're brilliant at and try and marry it with everything that I'm brilliant at and just see kind of what kind of weird ass baby turns up.
Yeah, and there's this experimental side to your debut album, like Space Tapes at the end of the album, just out there. It doesn't seem like stuff that's more experimental like that would come exactly from like 80s pop. So where do you think that comes from you?
I think I'm sort of, it's not just 80s pop music that that I'm inspired by, and like, you know, artists like Kevin Parker, Tame Impala, you know, or Boards of Canada, or I'm trying to think now, and obviously my mind's going blank and all I'm thinking of is the song Happy Birthday. But those kind of artists where sonically it's not necessarily as focused on, I mean, actually, like, Kevin Parker's albums are all just incredibly great pop songs, but his production is just so kind of creative, kind of slightly like psych prog, that kind of genre of music definitely sort of influenced this record as well. The Space Tapes was sort of just this thing that I did at the end where I just wanted to remix my own music, so it's like three tracks from the album but sort of remixed and made into like a continuous piece. And I think I really wanted to, and I laid it all down to tape, and kind of started exploring that way of recording or laying stuff down, because I'm really into analog recording, and it's just something I wanted to try. And we kind of stuck it on at the end for the digital release, and it's something that I'm sort of really proud of. And like, some people it's like their favorite thing, and that's what I love actually about doing stuff like that. It's like, some people are like, oh, you know what, Touch is my favorite, or What's It Gonna Be is my favorite. And some people are like, can you just make a whole album of like stuff that sounds like the Space Tapes? And it's really cool that there are people out there who like, and there'll be some people who are like, can you just never do anything like the Space Tapes ever again, because that was not my cup of tea. But I guess I just like pushing, like, seeing what I can get away with.
Yeah, well, let's drop in some of this music for the listeners.
Yeah.
Drop in some of What's It Gonna Be. So the video for What's It Gonna Be is really, really fun.
Yeah.
Kind of plays with the archetype of like the 80s teen movie, but it has like the queer characters and the outsiders. They're actually the focal point, and they win in the end. So tell me about how this all came together and having your own brother in it.
Yeah, well, John Hughes is sort of a huge sort of source of inspiration to me. His films, anyway, Sonic, on my music, I think. And it's something that people have always said, like, even from the moment, kind of, I think from Too Shy onwards, people were like, it kind of reminds me of like the lost soundtrack to a John Hughes movie. And so I guess I got to a stage where I was like, well, you know what, why don't we just make like a John Hughes movie in 3.5 minutes? Let's see if, you know, let's just try and do that. And I spoke to this incredibly talented director, Chloe Wallace, who made the video, and we came up with this kind of concept. But it wasn't like truth. It wasn't necessarily truthful to an experience that I had had. It was really cool, but I was just like, how about we just flip it so that this is the story, because this is actually really close to a story that me and my twin brother actually went through. And you know, the characters that I don't think I was going to be in the video. I think it was four random characters, and you know, I would probably be somewhere like singing, you know, in the cafeteria or something, you know, it'd be something like, or there would be like a prom and I was like the person playing at the prom. And I was like, well, how about we just make it about an experience that me and my twin brother had of like me having a crush on his first boyfriend before him having a crush on my first girlfriend when we were both a bit confused about like our sexualities. And she was like, oh, that's super great. And then we just decided, well, why, we may as well have me and Nick actually doing it. And Nick's an actor, like he can actually act, whereas I have no idea what I'm doing. So it was, for me, it was a bit trickier, but we just decided to go for it. And it was the funnest 2 days ever. And the thing about my kind of high school experience is I went to an all-girls school and Nick went to this like kind of comprehensive mixed school. And it was really nice for us to basically have 2 days where we got to pretend that we were in high school together and just kind of be kids again, like run around in the grass and like have fights, like throwing stuff at each other in the classroom. And but it was super fun.
Did you like high school?
I loved it. Yeah. I really loved it. It wasn't like how it was in that music video, obviously, because that was like super based on like, I guess, a European's idea of what an American high school.
Okay, so that's the thing about what we have.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that was our like, oh, I wonder what it would be like to go to high school in America. Maybe it'd be like this. I don't know whether it's remotely even accurate, but yeah, it's obviously inspired by those kind of like 80s, like the Breakfast Club and that kind of stuff. But I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was super, super different to that music video. But I was kind of like the weird kid at school, but like not in a bad way. Like people didn't, it wasn't like I necessarily got bullied or anything, but I was definitely, people were just like, oh, she's just, why has she got a guitar? Like, why is she sitting in the corner like with a guitar? Like, who is, she's a bit weird. But like they weren't mean. Yeah, I just definitely stood out a bit, I think.
And you were a big soccer player. Yeah. I should say football player.
Yeah. You can say soccer. I say soccer when I'm here.
Okay, so it's like a home turf thing.
Yeah,
that you
yeah,
say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have to like, right. I'm in your country, so I have to like, I have to play your rules. Like, it's not fair. I can't just tell you how to speak. Like, that's, I'm in America.
English football.
Yeah.
American football. English football.
Yeah, we should say, yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. I literally don't understand American football. Can we just have 5 seconds to be like, I've watched it and I have no idea what is going on. Like, baseball, I get, like, they're trying to hit the ball really far away and run around the circle. I get that because it's a bit like rounders. And like hockey, I get, it's like there's some goals, like here's a puck, we're gonna fight each other and maybe try and score as well. But like American football, I'm just like, I have like, maybe because I don't follow rugby, maybe it's quite close to rugby, but yeah, I'm just, I watch it, I'm like, nope.
I've loved it my whole life, so I could explain, answer any questions.
Yeah, well, maybe the rest of the podcast should just be you explaining the rules of American football to me. I'm sure people will love that.
You were a soccer star, though, right?
Yeah,
from what I've read.
I mean, that I think that, you know, the PR like to spice things up a bit, don't they? I was good.
She was so close to going pro.
Yeah, yeah. I was like the English version of Mia Hamm. I played for Manchester City, like, ladies team. I was a really good defender, and I realized at the age of 16 that instead of going out on a Saturday morning in the freezing cold wearing nothing but shorts and a t-shirt to end up not being able to walk the next day because of all the bruises I got from playing football, English football, that I could stay in my room and just write songs and be warm and be thought of as maybe potentially cool because I was a musician. I was like, okay, I'm gonna go for the latter option, and I'll play football in the summer for fun.
So when you say that you played for Manchester City, was that, because I don't really know how the leagues work, was that professional or like?
It wasn't professional, but I mean, the women's game in the UK, you know, has evolved and changed so much, even, you know, in the last 10 years. So it was, you know, we played in a league that was kind of mainly just teams from the north of England. But, you know, there are professional women's teams like Arsenal or Fulham. I don't even know if Manchester City, it must have a professional team now, but we weren't professionals. It was just kind of run by these two cool women who were just like, let's have a women's team as well. Like we didn't get paid or anything.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been nice.
So was there ever a time you were working on a good deal of music alongside soccer, trying to balance it?
I think, when I was like 16, I would basically, any time that I wasn't training or playing football or playing hockey, because I played hockey to quite a high level as well, I would be in my room, like, recording music on a mini disc, like, 8-track recorder. That's just what I did. I had friends, but I guess I didn't really go out that much. I was just like, I was probably a bit like a non-goth version of like the goth girl in The Breakfast Club. You know, just like people just like looked at her and just kind of looked at me and just were like, oh, I'm just going to leave her alone. Like she's doing her own thing over there. Like,
Well, you had things to do after school.
Yeah.
You weren't going to like just go hang because like, no, I have soccer and I have music to make.
Yeah, yeah.
Bye, guys.
Yeah, it was just what I wanted. I think music's the kind of thing where I always say to people, it's like, it's not an option to not do it. Like if you're a musician, you just make it all the time. Like, so when I had a full-time job in London, like, yeah, I would take holiday. And when I took holiday, I would probably have saved up and paid for studio time. Or, you know, when I had a day off, as soon as I got home in the evening, I just start recording, just writing. Like, sometimes I play video games as well. That's another thing that would happen in my life. So it's like video games, work, music. It's like the only thing that I did for like 4 years.
Let's drop in some more music from the new album. This is Indecision. This one not as much.
No, I didn't appear in them a lot to begin with, mainly because I can't act, so I was just like, don't put me in.
Well, Indecision, you just sit on a bus basically.
Yeah.
And then dance.
Yeah, that was all my friends in that video as well, pretty much. Like the lead actor wasn't, because it was quite a really specific role, but yeah, that was like in that club was basically the club, and I'm like doing the quote marks because it wasn't really a club, we just made it look like one. Was my friend runs like a little restaurant in this part of London called Dalston, which is like this kind of hipster area, and she has a basement. She's like, yeah, just hire my basement, we can turn it into a club. And I just like, okay, great, and invited like all my friends. I was like, hi guys, do you mind like dancing around for like 4 hours? You can't drink, by the way, because we're on set. And like I'm not covered insurance wise and we're like, yeah, all right. sounds good. There was actually one shot from it where this guy who's in drag, like, got annoyed with like another one of the drag queens, and it was so funny, and he just gets his like handbag and just like whips him in the face, and like it was so good. I really wanted it to be in the video, but like I think it would have just been a bit like, yeah, the dude who got smacked in the face would probably not have been really happy, but it was just like the sassiest thing I've ever seen on camera ever.
Why did he get smacked?
I don't know. I think maybe like the other dude was just being like too good, like too glamorous, or like, or like maybe he was like cramping his style. Or I don't really know. Like what? Yeah, maybe he was just like, I don't know, like dancing too closely and like obstructing this other guy's amazing dance moves or whatever. I don't really know. But Yeah, it was just so funny that it was caught on. I think it's somewhere like deep in the depths of my Instagram, actually. I think I posted it. It's just like in slow motion. And it's just brilliant.
Huh. And was either of them like the main character who you're introduced to in the video at first, where he just seems like a dude and then you get surprised that he goes to this party?
Yeah, it's him. It's actually him. It's him doing it, which is really funny. Like, it's him sort of like, yeah, smacking someone in the face with a handbag. It's so ridiculous. But yeah, no, that was a really fun shoot, and it was directed by my friend as well. Mm-hmm. My two friends, like Nev and Emily, and they're like, Emily's like this tiny, tiny woman who looks like Justin Bieber, and Nev is this like giant man. And they kind of go under the name Hilo because one's really short and one's really tall. But mm-hmm. they're really, really awesome directors. I love working with my friends, like people I know. I think it's really fun.
Yeah, and it seems like you've gotten a really good response for making really good music videos based around like queer characters.
Yeah, and it was like totally not even like, it wasn't like I set off at the beginning going like, I really want to make like queer only videos. Like, I just, like, my first video was like super queer, sort of by accident, just because like most of my friends are gay. So I was like, oh, again, I was just like, oh, who wants to like be filmed like snogging, making out with someone? We're gonna do that for a day. And they were like, yeah, okay, cool. And like a lot of them are couples. And then one of my friends, actually, this girl called Tova, had a huge crush on this girl called Alice. She's like, shoo, can you put me with Alice? Can you make me snog Alice, please? And I was like, okay, I'll try. And they like been dating ever since. Like, so yeah, so that was the start of a young love, which is nice. But yeah, I guess I've just sort of done, I've just made stuff that felt honest or truthful to me with my own friends. And like, yeah, it's been really nice to see the reaction to that. Like, it's, you know, seeing people react to what's it going to be and be like, why isn't there a film? Like, this should be a film. And then I was like, oh my God, they're like, there isn't a queer high school movie, like full length. There isn't. Should be.
It's like a subplot in Mean Girls.
Yeah. Or like, it's a subplot in anything. Or it's like, normally there's always like an unhappy ending for the queer characters that are on the fringes of like the main narrative. And, you know, in this video, there's like a happy ending. And yeah, you don't know what's going to, you know, probably not going to be together forever, are we? But like, you know, it's high school romance. Mm-hmm. But it did just sort of make me go like, oh, it's really weird. Like, because even stuff like, you know, if I think to films like that I watched growing up that were queer, like But I'm a Cheerleader, like that movie, like the girl is taken out of high school to like this queer like camp where they try and make everyone straight again. Like, and it's absolutely brilliant, and it's got RuPaul in it, like way before he was kind of RuPaul. So yeah, and like they're never, these films that are queer, they're never actually set in high school. They're always taken out of that, or they, you know, they're set at a time where like, you know, people are older. I was like, oh yeah, we should, like, and me and Chloe even talked about it, we're like, we should totally just make this like a full-length movie at some point, but we should just do a Kickstarter campaign or something. Yeah. GoFundMe campaign to like make the What's It Gonna Be video into a full-length movie. It'd be quite fun. People know the ending now, so we kind of ruined it.
I think there's other ways you could expand it. Prequels,
yeah.
Sequels,
yeah.
Are you working on any future music videos?
I think I'm always working on music videos in my brain. Definitely, yeah. There's definitely stuff going on at the moment that I'm not going to talk about because I want it to be like a surprise. But yeah, no. I'm always. I mean, I'm what I did as a job was like making, like editing videos. So I'm I always think about, like, I just recently, like, finished a music video for like there's a secret track on the end of the record, and I cut together a load of footage of me and my twin brother as like babies, essentially, like kids, like home videos, and sort of made a video with that. So yeah, I'm always sort of thinking of ways I can spend money, basically.
Okay.
And like Interscope are like, no, stop, chill out. Yeah.
What was it like when Interscope and maybe other major labels first started getting in touch with you? Because it seems like you had an internet buzz for a little while. Then just lots of pressure from fans on the internet being like, when are you going to release your album? Where's the album?
Yeah, yeah. It's weird, isn't it? It's like you put one song out and then people are like, where's the album? You're like, whoa, there. Like, I literally have 3 songs, so I need at least another 7 more and some time. So that was super weird. Like, but that's the way it happens. Like, I actually sofa surfed at my friend's. I say friend, who's not really a friend, but this girl called Maggie Rogers, who did this incredible song called Alaska that Pharrell was like freaking out about, and it went viral on Reddit. Mm-hmm. And we kind of spent like the evening just talking about how weird it is, how you can just be, you know, doing your own thing, and suddenly, you know, because of a video, something goes viral, and suddenly every single record label on the entire planet are kind of talking to you, and it's not like you were born that day, but you've been making music for years before that, and no one cared, like, other than, you know, your mum and your dad and the few people that bought it on Bandcamp or whatever it was, or downloaded it for free on SoundCloud. So it is a really strange experience to go through. Like, it's awesome, it's really exciting, and it's really frightening at the same time. Like, it's because nothing's changed. Absolutely nothing's changed. You're just doing what you're doing. And that's sort of what I say to people. It's like, when they're like, oh, do you have any advice? I'm just like, just make music for you. Just do what you do. Don't care about anyone else. Like, don't think like, how can I get a record deal? How can I get a booking agent? How can I get management? It's like, people will find you when you're ready for it. That's just how, and people might never find you as well. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Just because you might never have a record deal doesn't mean you shouldn't make music. Just make music.
So in this situation you're in now with Polydor, Interscope, being with them for a while, touring now, the album out, what do you want to do going forward? What's on your mind?
I think I'm super focused on just touring this record. Like, I've got another couple of weeks in the States with M83, and then I'm touring kind of Europe and going to Asia for the first time, and Australia, you know, going to all these places I've never been to, which is, you know, incredibly exciting. But also just, you know, I'm already thinking about the next album, like, just what I want to make. Like, it's funny because at the end of writing Nothing's Real, I kind of just thought, like, how does anyone ever gather the energy to write a second record or a third record? Because that, it really took it out of me. It was like such a personal record, and it took me such a long time, like, relatively, like, I mean, I don't think it was actually a long time, but it's a long time to be making a record and be in the public eye in that way. It wasn't like I just was making a record in secret and then I was like, oh, hi, by the way, I'm Shura, here's this song called Touch, and here's my album that's coming out 6 months later. I literally put out a song, everyone was looking at me, and it's like, yeah, it's like trying to get dressed in front of a million people, and hopefully you do your buttons up right, and people like your outfit at the end of it. It's a very, you feel very exposed. And at the end of it, I was just like, I never want to make an album ever again. And then this weird thing happens where you just, like, you know, you haven't made any music for 2 weeks and you're on tour, and you just start like humming this thing, and you see some trees because you're driving through Wisconsin, and you start writing down some words, and you're like, I really want to just get in a studio and start recording stuff. And you're like, oh, that's how people make their second record. Like, you just the and again, it goes back to that thing of like music not being a choice. I think songs find you. You discover songs. You don't write songs. You discover them. They exist already. There are only so many notes, in you know, this order or whatever, and you just discover them. And some of them are good, and some of them are less good. So I'm already thinking about what it is that I want to make next, and I think that's the most important thing. Is just like, where do you go from here? And that's the super exciting thing about being a musician. It's like, well, what's next?
More videos to make.
Yeah, more videos, more luggage to like trek around like the entire United States of America. I just feel like the bag lady in like Home Alone. Like, I just need the big coat and to be like surrounded by pigeons. But yeah, it's yeah, like more.
You're in New York.
Yeah, I am. No, I did. In fact, like when I was in New York, I think it was February, when just after the kind of like the polar vortex, and it was like so cold. It was like -17 Celsius, which I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but it was like the coldest thing I've ever experienced. And I went outside and I was smoking at the time, and I just thought my fingers were going to fall off. So I just threw the cigarette to the floor. I was like, screw this, I'm not smoking. I had this like giant coat, and I was up by the bit in Central Park where all the carriages are, and there's lots of pigeons like around there, I guess. And there were these like pigeons like flying around me whilst I was wearing this big coat and like my beanie, and my hair's just like not been brushed for like 2 weeks. Well, I never brushed my hair. And I literally looked like the woman from Home Alone, and this like homeless person on the street was like, I love your coat. And I was like, oh my God, like when someone who's like homeless starts saying that they like your fashion sense, maybe you need to like rethink it like a little bit. But I still dress the same. I still dress a little bit like I don't have a home. But I guess at the moment I don't have a home, like, so it's okay.
Also, Home Alone, another John Hughes movie.
Yeah,
at least the first one.
Yeah, I think I don't know about the others. That is one of the best films ever made. And is it the first one or is it the second? Which is the one where he goes to like a hotel and gets room service?
That's the second one.
Because
the Plaza Hotel.
Yeah, that is literally, as a kid, like, when you go to a hotel for the first time, you think that's going to be your experience.
Yeah, that's your idea of a
and
hotel.
And then you're just completely crushed when it's not. And you're like, oh, where do I get my ice cream, like room service? Oh, I can't because I'm in like a 3-star hotel in like Ibiza. Like, it's just not. It kind of actually ruins hotels for you. For us, we're staying in like Days Inns and like La Quintas and stuff, and it's just like, oh, there's no room service, god damn it. It's fun. I really actually quite like staying in these weird hotels in like the middle of like just nowhere. Just,
yeah,
like,
that's how you see what a country is really like, or a state more specifically is really like.
Yeah, and it's just so big. Like, you see like an atlas and you see how big America is on a map. You know, you can see that and it's really obvious. You're like, oh, okay, America's massive. And then you drive it and you're like, oh, whoa, this is like way bigger than I thought. You know, I had a friend who was going to sleep in London. She was like, oh, yo, where are you at the moment? I was like, oh, I'm in Kansas. Like, kind of driving to, I can't remember where we were driving to. We were driving somewhere else. And she woke up the next morning. I was like, morning, like, how are you, like, where are you? I was like, I'm in Kansas still. Like, I've been driving the whole time you've been asleep and I'm still in the same state. It's just insane. And there was nothing. There was literally cows and fields and like Taco John's. That was it. That's all. And a McDonald's. Like, that was the only thing that we saw for 7 hours. Like, it's crazy. Like, it's beautiful, but it's just, if you drove 7 hours from London anywhere, you'd be in the sea.
Yeah, it's a big place.
Yeah, that's one
America
state.
America is huge.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything that no one doesn't already know, but yeah, when you tour it in a van, it's just, you really get a sense of it.
Yeah, we keep coming to John Hughes films. You're on tour right now with someone who likes John Hughes a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You guys could collaborate on that feature, make the score.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's, I mean, MH3 is like insane. Like, just what he's done. It's really weird to like be on tour with, because Tegan and Sarah and MH3 are very, 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 very different artists. Although they're kind of like, I guess they're both sort of inspired by 80s stuff now. But I mean, like, I'm thinking of, if I think of like the Tegan and Sarah that I came to, like the Con era and like So Jealous. And MH3, they're like, they're different. But they're both like so incredibly inspiring. Like, the thing about watching Anthony like on stage is just like, it's almost as if everyone else on the stage like is more important than he is. Like, that's how he is on stage. He's so humble and he's so giving to like everyone else's energies. And I love what he does with like the fact that he has open auditions. Like, so he just, he's like, oh, on Facebook, like, I need a keyboard player, like, apply here. And you're like, that's so exciting, because that's a world, like, you know, he's like at the top, like at the top of his game. Like, he is the best at what he does. Like, and that world, like, for so many musicians seems so inaccessible. It's like, how do, you know, if you're like a young kid, like, who plays guitar, and you say, like, how do I get on a, you know, how do I become a touring musician? How do I do that? Like, and he's just like, yeah, well, if you're good enough, like, you can join me. And I love that kind of philosophy. And like, yeah, I think the guitarist he has on tour with him at the moment is like 21 years old. I'm like, I could barely like fry an egg when I was 21. Like, how amazing is it to see like this guy like absolutely kill it every night on stage? Like, it's awesome. But yeah, we can talk about John Hughes more as well.
Well, I was going to say, that's about all I have in mind as far as questions. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
Just that this coffee's pretty great. Yeah, I'm having a nice little coffee here. Just soy milk. Your soy milk is different to my soy milk. Well, not mine, because it's like, but it's sweetened here, like, automatically.
That makes sense. Yeah, road tripping across America is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, I wouldn't want to do it in a bus. Like, it might be more comfortable, but you just don't get to see it. And like, there, you know what, driving from Salt Lake City to Scottsdale in Arizona was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in my life. And driving from LA up to Portland, again, just like, there were volcanoes. Like, I missed one drive from Vancouver to Calgary, because I had to get to Calgary early to record some stuff. And the boys were like, we've just seen a bear and wolves. Like, I was just like, that's insane. That's how awesome is that?
It's like,
that,
stop
that
the
America,
tour.
Yeah, that America's a country where you can, so Salt Lake City, you start off in the mountains and there's snow, and you end up in Arizona where there's like a red dust bowl. Like, it's just mad. Like, it's just, you have everything. You have everything here, and you have like the best of it. Like, you have the best mountains and like the best lakes and the best bears and the best, you know, and the best worst food and the best food. Like, it's just, you do everything times a million, and it's a really fun country to be in.
This is sponsored by the Travel Bureau for the United States of America.
Yeah.
Come to America.
Yeah. It's also really interesting being here during the run up to the election. So like, I feel really privileged to sort of see up close one of the strangest sort of elections in the history of democracy.
Are you going to be here? I guess you will. Still in.
I'm going to hopefully. I might stay out in Minneapolis to get started on album two. You know, the difficult second album. So if I stay out in Minneapolis, then yeah, I will definitely be here during the election, which will be completely fascinating, but also quite frustrating as a person who can't influence it in any way or vote or. But yeah, I mean, every night I'm getting into my Days In or La Quinta or what, Best Western, whatever it is, and turning on the news and just going, this is just fascinating. Just like, I can't believe that these are the kind of things that we're talking about like politics. You know, we're talking, you know, it's like the Twitter kind of culture, you know, that 129 character culture or whatever is just like completely taken over politics. And that's just fascinating, you know, the fact that the debate was the most tweeted debate ever, and we just say, okay, well, literally, like, social media is that important now, that it's affecting the way and the types of things that people say in the run-up to basically the most important job application in the world. Like, you're the biggest, most powerful country in the world, and this is probably therefore the most important job in the world, and we're talking about weird stuff people say about women, and I don't know whether or not someone deleted 3 million emails or whatever it is, and you're just like, what, how is this, like, this is so weird, like, but
yeah. And the fact that Trump and Hillary are taking shots at each other personally on Twitter, just that, like 10 years ago, thing of an election being like that,
yeah, like, delete your account, like, it was hilarious, yeah, but you're just like, this is not like a, yeah, like the fact that they even have Twitter, like, I get why they have a Twitter, because Twitter is huge, and it's an incredibly effective way of reaching people. It's why I have a Twitter. It's why Justin Bieber has a Twitter. It's like why anyone who needs or wants wants to communicate with followers or fans, whatever it is, or supporters, like, But to me, it's just like, it is weird that also, we're not talking about music at all, but it's just, yeah, it's weird to me that a politician has a Twitter. It's weird to me that a politician can be good at Twitter, like, as well, like, but they can be, like, but what, you know, and being good at Twitter is just a weird concept in itself. Like, when, you know, like, when I was writing, you know, my CV when I was like 17, I was just like, never thought I'd be like, yeah, really great at Twitter, really good at communicating with people over 129 characters.
Verified account.
Yeah, verified account. Don't know who verified it, but finally got verified, so I'm officially a real human now. But yeah, I mean, that's a whole other conversation for another time.
Well, sounds like Minnesota, you'll be fairly safe on election day.
Cold, but
don't be in rural Louisiana.
Yeah, I'll try to avoid that.
Should be some probably very angry people.
Yeah, hopefully, but yeah. Well, no, I don't wish anger upon anyone, but yeah, I think it was slightly terrifying prospect. Well, it's all terrifying, really, isn't it? It's like Team America is just happening in real life.
Well, the for sure, the American extravaganza cross-country tour continues.
Sponsored by Taco Bell.
And thanks so much for coming by Billboard in New York.
No, thanks for having me.
That's Shura. She was really fun. I hope you enjoyed listening to us talk about all those things. If you've never been to America, maybe we just inspired you to take a huge road trip across America. If you already live in America, maybe we inspired you to leave your house and drive down the street. I don't know. Always trying to inspire people with this Pop Shop podcast. Yeah, I saw Shura the day after that interview took place. She was opening for M83 at Terminal 5 in New York City. It is great. She puts on a really impassioned live show. There was like throwing of her beanie hat, throwing of synthesizers, throwing her body across the stage. She's great. Check her out live. And like I said, the debut album, it's called Nothing's Real. It's really, really good. Trust me. Next week on the Pop Shop podcast, as always, on Thursday, we'll have our headliner interview. Little hint, it's with a member of Vampire Weekend. Not going to say which, but it's one of those guys. Subscribe to the show. Get it automatically without having to search for it. You can do that in iTunes. And while you're there, please, please, if you listen this far, I would appreciate so much to hear your feedback. Do that by giving us a star rating and just writing in what you like, what you don't like, how you'd like to see the show different. It's really, really helpful. Yeah, so Keith and Katie will be back with a new episode of Pop Shop in a few days. And I'll see you next Thursday. Bye-bye.